and welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM. My name's Eddie LeSure, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. Come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at WPVMFM.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation, as we take an in-depth and informative look into approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, our website is amindfulemergence.com. And with that, I want to welcome into the studio, first of all, my co-host, Margaret Kirshner. Good evening, Margaret.
Hi.
And also at this time, I want to welcome our guest for this week, and that is film producer Phil Borges, who is coming to us all the way live from Seattle, Washington, via phone technology. And good evening, Phil.
Good evening, Eddie.
It's you're coming in loud and clear, so you're telling me it's cloudy in Seattle.
Yeah, and that's not very unusual for this time of year. But we've had a few sunbreaks today, as we call them.
Okay. Well, it's nice in, right now it's dark in Asheville, but it's been sunny here. Anyway, our theme this week is Psychosis and Spiritual Awakening, Rethinking Madness. And Phil is, for over 30 years, has been documenting indigenous and tribal cultures, striving to create an understanding of the challenges they face. Phil's work has been exhibited in museums and galleries worldwide. And Phil has produced a documentary, Crazy Wise, is called, which we're going to talk about this week, among other things, which really reveals a paradigm shift, changing the way Western culture defines and treats mental illness. And so we'll get in depth in this. What else do you want to add to what we're going to be focusing on this week, Phil?
Well, I just want to say that during that 30 years of documenting tribal and indigenous cultures around the world, I began to meet the healers and found out the way, we often call them shaman, but I found out the way they were identified, and which was surprising to me, that they were identified by having what we would call a psychological crisis. And so that led me to start interviewing more of them, and I began meeting these individuals in cultures all over the world, really. I spent most of my work in indigenous and tribal cultures, ended up interviewing maybe 35 or 40 of these individuals, and most of them were identified in their youth by having some sort of crisis, often a mental emotional crisis. So that led into this film, Crazy Wise, that we'll be talking about, where I ended up following two individuals that were struggling with their sanity over that five-year period. And during that time, I started interviewing psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health workers, and especially people with lived experience, people who had successfully navigated one of these crises. And it's been an incredible journey. By the way, I have no background, educational background in mental health. This all is what I've learned kind of as the everyman over the last five and a half years. So what I've learned is what I'd like to talk about.
And so although you don't have a background in mental health, You have a long background in producing documentaries. You've done them on indigenous cultures for Discovery, National Geographic channels, and you regularly present at universities, you teach workshops, and you've done a number of TED Talks, correct?
That's right.
So your background has been in film production primarily.
Well, my background, I have a real spotty background, Eddie.
Like mine.
I spent 18 years as an orthodontist.
Oh.
And I switched from being an orthodontist to a photographer, and I did most of my documenting as a still photographer, doing exhibits, books around human rights issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues that women face in the developing world was one of the big topics I spent a lot of time on. But this is my first documentary film, actually. I've done several small documentaries, but this is the first feature-length documentary.
Now, did you grow up in the Pacific Northwest, where you live now?
I actually grew up in San Francisco and moved here at the time I started my career as a photographer.
Mm-hmm. And was there something about your childhood, something about growing up? I mean, what inspired you to finally come around and have an interest in indigenous cultures, human rights issues, the rights of women?
Oh, boy. Well, number one, my dad died when I was 7, and I was raised by women, my sisters and my mother, and I knew how hard they worked to keep everything going during the time we were growing up in the 50s and 60s. So that's part of it. Also during that time, that may have had some influence on what I eventually got into here in this world of spirituality and mental, emotional distress, was we had a great aunt move in with us when right after my dad died, who was very much into spirituality. Her husband and her son were both, they died rather suddenly in an accident, and that sent her into an institution. She was institutionalized for a couple of years, and right soon as she got out of the institution, she came to live with us. And she was calling in the spirits at night. So I'm sure that has something to do with my interest in this field.
Well, being around all those women, I bet you learned to put the toilet seat down when you were finished.
Very often, yes.
So you were an orthodontist, and then you started doing photography. How did you end up, I mean, was it, you said you had an interest in indigenous cultures. Where did you start going? Where did you initially go? Where did you travel to?
Well, you know, while I was an orthodontist, I always took my vacations. And when I took them, I didn't go to Europe. I usually ended up in some very remote area because I just love going to places where individuals lived off the land. I spent my summers on a ranch where we literally did not go to the grocery store. We grew all our food and everything. So I was kind of drawn to people like that live off the land. And so when I started doing my photography, I combined that love of travel to those places with the love of doing portraiture. And I had been doing that for quite some time. In fact, I was doing it while I was in dental school. And while I was in dental school, I lived in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco in the mid to late 60s, right during the whole hippie
movement. Wow, you saw it all, huh?
Movement. And I had this job interviewing people down on the street, Haight Street, as to why they were sharing their needles, because there was a big hepatitis outbreak at the time. And my job was to go down and collect interviews and find out how they were using these needles when they were injecting their drugs. And I started doing portraits of the people that I interviewed. So I just really enjoyed that, and I still do. One of the favorite things I like to do are interviews.
Wow. So in the United States and most of the Western world, they have a different, very different approach to mental health disorder, if we want to call it that. What they see as madness, psychosis, they have a very different way of looking at it than you noticed and what other people have noticed in indigenous cultures. My understanding is that one out of every five Americans has at some point suffered a psychological crisis. Would you agree with that, or is that an exaggeration?
Well, that's actually a statistic from the National Institute of Mental Health. One in five of us will, during our lifetime, experience a psychological crisis. And that was shocking to me when I heard that, just much like it shocked you.
Can we identify what is a psychological crisis?
Well, it could vary, and I mean, it goes by various names. If you look in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, it could cover a whole range of things. But in general, severe depression, severe anxiety, panic attacks, the psychoses, schizoaffective, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, ADHD. I mean, there could be a lot of different symptoms that qualify as a psychological crisis. Yeah.
And as noted in the movie, the list keeps growing. It seems more and more, virtually anything that seems out of the ordinary now gets viewed as a pathology.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's one of the big problems. We're beginning to pathologize normal human experience. Mm-hmm. Things start appearing in the DSM, like sibling rivalry disorder, or if you grieve for more than 2 weeks after the death of a spouse that you've had for 40 years, that's considered severe depression. So it's starting to pathologize normal human experience, and a lot of people are starting to push back on that. Even people that have written some of the DSMs in the past. You know, there's been five different editions starting in 1952. The last one was released in 2013. The one in 52 had 106 disorders. The latest one has 365 disorders.
We have this thing called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and it seems as though those initials are a misnomer, because the P stands for post, which is kind of not really true, because trauma still happens. It's continuous. And then the D also stands for disorder, and that's not actually true, because the post-traumatic stress is a normal, natural reaction to a unusual situation. So, of course, we're going to have stress.
Yeah, our reaction to it.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody has been in a war zone, you know, it's understandable that they're going to experience stress afterwards and have certain symptoms. Would you agree?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And coming back to this culture, there's another thing, Eddie, that goes along with that, other than just experiencing war trauma. Sebastian Younger wrote a book called Tribes, and he said in his book, he claimed that, you know, it really only about 10 to 15% of servicemen see actual battle nowadays, where they're, you know, it isn't like World War II when they were in the trenches by the millions. And it's coming back that he claims that during this war experience where these young men and women form these tight social groups in order to survive, really. And when they come back to our culture, it's such a change. We're such an individualistic culture. And they don't have that tight camaraderie they had in the service. And that's part of the post-traumatic stress that they feel.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on the new WPBMLP in Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7 on your dial, and globally at WPBMFM.org. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week, actually via cell phone connection, by Phil Borges, a film producer of the movie Crazy Wise, and our topic is Rethinking Madness, Psychosis, and Spiritual Awakening. So what you're really talking about, Phil, is community. I read that book, and I also saw an article that he produced in Vanity Fair, and that does seem to be one of the reasons, a major reason, that individuals who have been overseas in theater, as they say, when they come back, they commit suicide is because they lose that connection. What did you learn in traveling among indigenous people about the role of community as it relates to these non-ordinary states of consciousness?
Well, in terms of these individuals, now, I should say, in terms of mental health, I was mainly interviewing the shaman, the healers. We call them shaman. They go by different names in different tribes. But that's who I was interviewing. I wasn't doing a general look at mental health in the tribe. Uh-huh. Although I can say that, you know, the young shaman, what they're told, so it was very often the young person would go into this altered state. They either started hearing voices, seeing visions. They were going through panic attacks. They didn't know what was happening to them. Very frightened. Some thought they were dying. They were usually given an older shaman as a mentor, and an older shaman who he or she had themselves been through a severe mental emotional crisis before they were mentored. So they were given somebody like a peer to help guide them and support them while they learned to work with these energies that were coming through them, to work with their unique sensitivities, because these tend to be very sensitive people, mental emotionally sensitive. And so they got that support, and not only that, they were told once they learned how to manage these energies, that they would be very valuable to the community. They'd be a healer or a seer, a visionary, or a priest. I mean, we would call them that, but they would serve very important functions in the community. So they were given purpose in what they were going through. There was meaning behind it. And that's very different than what a young person that experiences a crisis in our culture, especially in the last 30 years, has been told. Usually it's, you know, you've got a chemical imbalance of your brain, and we really have no cure for that right now. But we do have these medications that can help you live somewhat a normal life. And that told to a young person, by the way, 50% of these occurrences happen in adolescence. 75% happen before the age of 24. So if you're telling a young person something like that, that's very frightening. And then they end up with one of these labels. It could be schizophrenia, it could be schizoaffective disorder. Most often nowadays it's bipolar disorder. That isolates them because they're ashamed of this new label. They're a second-class citizen known as a mental patient or somebody with mental illness. So given fear and isolation, those are the two worst things you could do for somebody's mental health versus somebody that's told they have a special sensitivity. Yes, it's difficult. You can learn to manage it. But once you do, you're going to be very valuable to us. Those are two very different stories or narratives that are told to somebody in that condition. And anybody in that condition is very, very sensitive to fear or any emotion. And they'll pick up on the fear of the people around them. And so it just makes sense that story does not, in and of itself, does harm.
Yeah. And I noticed you interviewed many, many wonderful and insightful individuals. One of them, who Margaret and I absolutely love, is Dr. Gabor Mate. And he talked about the fact that there is such a thing as a continuum that we're all on. And it's fluid. I don't know if he used the term fluid, but just the whole idea that, like it was alluded to earlier, one in five of us experience psychological crisis during our life. But I think at any point in time, we're somewhere on that continuum. And in these other cultures, they're not ostracized.
That's right. I mean, as Gabor Mate points out, the myth is there's the normal and there's the abnormal.
Right.
And there's this dividing line. No, we all experience anxiety. We've all experienced bouts of some depression. We've all had instances where we have a different reality than somebody around us. I mean, it may be slight, but we all have our own realities. So to label somebody as abnormal when it's just a matter of degree that they're experiencing these issues is a mistake.
And as Robert Thurman pointed out in your film, he says we live in a psychotic society.
Well, yeah, I love Robert. And what he said at the end is, what I mean by psychotic is out of touch with reality.
Exactly.
So that meant a couple of things to me. Number one is our sense of who we are as individuals, as a separate individual, separate from the whole, is in many ways and believed by many people to be an illusion. It's an illusion of our mind. It isn't the reality of the fact that we are all a part of this web of life. And the mystics have told us that for years. I know I've been around the Tibetan Buddhists for a long time, and they completely teach the not only impermanence, but the interconnectedness of all life, and stress that. And to be in a culture like ours, that is, it's kind of the cult of the individual, really. We put individualism above all, more than most cultures, above all else. And that has definite benefits, but it has a definite downside as well, in terms of our competition with each other, in the terms of our isolation.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I notice when I go into these tribal communities, how much intimacy they have with each other. And, you know, I'll be there in one of these groups, and I'll have my tent pitched, and every once in a while, I'll want to go to bed early and read for a while. And I'll get up the next morning and they'll ask me, were you mad at us last night? You went into your tent. And I says, no, I just needed a little alone time.
Yeah.
They're with each other more and on a continuous basis, more intimately and on a continuous basis than we are. They spend a lot of FaceTime together.
I remember being in Borneo, and the whole community lived in one big longhouse.
Yeah.
And they shared a kitchen. You know, it's like this is how we do things.
Yeah. And, you know, the World Health Organization did a study, and first in 1969, where they did follow-up on people considered to be schizophrenic, people that were hearing things and seeing things that other people weren't, outside of consensus reality. And they found that the recovery rate from those states in indigenous and underdeveloped countries, as they called them at the time, was almost twice as much as the recovery rates in our developed country with all our medication, with all our experts in mental health, highly trained. Their recovery rate was much higher. And they couldn't believe the study at first, so they repeated it in 1978, and then again in, I think it was 1998, same results. And the conclusion was, being in a developed country is a strong prognosticator of not recovering from a severe mental emotional distress.
Mm. Phil, it must be a great relief for people who have a psychological crisis and for people who care about them and love them to learn and understand that other cultures look at this differently than we do. Simply to have that information that, you know, it may not be just a brain disorder or a difference. There may be a special sensitivity in that individual that is awakening and wants its expression. And if given the right support by others in society, they may come through that crisis more whole, more valuable to society, rather than just receive pharmaceuticals to just kind of get through the day.
That's so true. You know, where I've gotten my most education in this field is people with lived experience, people who have successfully navigated a mental emotional crisis. And I'll tell you, almost everyone to the person has told me, as difficult as it was, and it was probably the most difficult thing that ever happened to me, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. And what they say is that, you know, these common things that there's a good part of this experience many times. And they have this sense of unity. Adam in our film says it. He says, it was the first time I felt real connected to the universe, a real connection to the universe, where I felt like that was me and I was it. And he lost that sense of separateness. And that can lead later on to deeper compassion, deeper empathy. They also talk about losing their inhibitions during that time. And that's another interesting thing. I mean, that can get you into a lot of trouble in our society. Many people in a crisis like that get naked in public.
Mm-hmm.
And so their inhibitions drop. I talked to one individual who had this horrible stutter for most of his life, and I think he had his break when he was 35. His stutter went away during his break. They have time distortions, but the other thing that happens is their creativity goes way up. Their creative flow increases. So if they're writers, words just come out of them. They're not inhibited by the constant mental critic in our head, the mental chatter. And so there's good things to these altered states of consciousness. And, you know, the shaman is taught to go into that state and then come back. And because we have to live as separate individuals in our society, in this world that we are in time and space. We have to be have a sense of our own individuality. But being able to tap into this other dimension, if you would call it that, has its value. And many people that have touched into it try to find a way back into it without going too far and going into the terrible distress of a psychotic state.
Wow. Well, Phil, this is absolutely fascinating discussion. We're going to continue this very soon. I want to start getting into some specifics about the movie, about Adam and Ikiah, two individuals that you put a lot of focus on. I want to ask questions about meditation, and also want to talk about the Center for Spiritual Emergence here in Asheville and the fact that it's organizing a viewing, a showing of Crazy Wise coming up here in Asheville in March. Talk about that. But I'm going to take a musical break now, and I've got a piece of music by Mose Allison that I thought might possibly fit. You like Mose Allison?
I do.
Do you know his song?
I haven't heard him in a while.
Well, you're going to hear him now. The name of the song is called Lost Mind. So let's give a listen.
If you would be so kind to help me find my mind, I want to thank you in advance. Know this before you start, my soul's been torn apart. I lost my mind in a wild romance. My future is my past, this memory will last. I'll live to love the days gone by. Each day that come and go is like the one before. My mind's lost till the day I die. Words would fail me if I tried to describe her, though I know she's not all she should have been. She was the devil with the face of an angel. She was sweet and cruel, cruel and sweet as homemade sin. If you would be so kind to help me find my mind, I want to thank you in advance. Know this before you start, my soul's been torn apart. I lost my mind in a wild Sin. If you would be so kind to help me find my mind, I want to thank you in advance. Know this this before you start. My soul's been torn apart. I lost my mind in a wild romance. I lost my mind in a wild romance.
Mose Allison and Lost Mind. You're listening to A Mindful Emergence on 103.7 WPVM-FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is Eddie Lesher, and from 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPVM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in their effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. In addition to tuning in Monday nights from 7 to 8 and Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m., past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. It's really easy to access them. You just go to WPVMFM.org, open up the schedule, and click on this program, which is listed Mondays at 7, and you'll see this program and other past programs showing, and you can check them out at your own leisure. We are broadcasting live Monday, November 27th, 2017. This is program number 99. And all our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, our Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. We also offer trainings for CEU credits to healthcare professionals. You can get more information online at amindfulemergence.com. You can also find us on Facebook and LinkedIn. And by the way, if you're enjoying this show, another program in particular on WPVM that you might want to check out, kind of has a similar theme, is A Better World, which is hosted by McNair Ezard, Thursdays between 5 and 6. This is a program that looks at people and organizations that are working in areas such as hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, the environment, and spirituality. And McNair interviews people who are really out there making a difference. And one of the people on the planet who's really making a difference is our guest this week, who is kind enough to join us. He's in Seattle, Washington. His name is Phil Borges, and the topic is Rethinking Madness, Psychosis, and Spiritual Awakening. So, Phil, you're still with us, right?
I am here.
Absolutely. So, in the film, you interview a lot of people, you talk about a number of different people, but there are two individuals that you spend quite a bit of focus on. And I understand it's over a five-year period that you did the filming, and that's Adam and Akaya. And I was wondering if you could talk about them and their journey and what you learned by being with them.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'll start with Adam because he was the first person I met that actually started the whole film. You know, I met Adam as we were, a producer and I were going to do a film on meditation, on mindfulness. And she sent me Adam as an interview subject in that he had done a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat after having, well, let me back up and say, when he was 20 years old, he had a severe, what was called psychotic break. It was labeled bipolar, but he definitely had this very severe distressing episode. And he was put on meds for 4 years. The meds weren't working for him very well, and they had severe side effects. So he, at one point in time, was on 15 pills a day. He was being treated for the side effects as well as treated for his bipolar condition, as they called it. And he, at one point, 4 years after this all started, he decided to do this meditation retreat, this Vipassana. He went off all his medications, which is, I've learned, a very dangerous thing to do because there's severe withdrawal issues around medications. He gave them all up, went cold turkey on them, and did this retreat. and it stabilized him miraculously. He was able to go back to work. His parents said there was this immense change, the very definite change in his peace of mind and his whole being. And that's when I met him shortly after that. By the time I met him, he had done 3 of these meditation retreats. And as you know, Eddie, you've done one, I understand.
Yes.
They're severe.
They're very intense.
10 days, silent meditation, 10 hours a day in meditation, not looking anybody in the eye or in your own world for that time.
No journaling. And that's strictly meditation.
Yeah. And I ended up doing one myself.
Oh, good for you.
It was quite an experience. I mean, it's a difficult thing to do. But anyway, he stabilized himself. And so I thought, this is going to be a great little story about somebody who has used this meditation to stabilize themselves. And especially after his history. So while we were filming him in the first couple of months, and we were doing a film about every 3 weeks, we would interview him and just ask him how he was doing. And about 2 or 3 months into it, he said, I'm going to go and do my 4th meditation retreat, Vipassana. And he went to do that. And during that time of that 4th retreat, painful childhood memories started coming up. And he came to the realization that his grandfather had molested him when he was a child. And it bothered him so much, he went to the retreat leaders and they said, you know, given your past mental health history, we don't think this is a good place for you to be right now. And they just decided that he should go home. So he was kind of rejected from the meditation retreat. He went home, he told his parents about what had come up for him, and they didn't believe him. They just said, you know, you've been in this crazy state for so long, this is just another part of it. And he got essentially isolated from both the retreat and his parents. And at that point, that isolation from those two sources of support sent him into a downward spiral, and I've never seen anything like it in terms of the change that happened to Adam during that, just that couple of week period after that. It wasn't long before he was homeless, living in a car, and going through these severe bouts of screaming voices in his head. He really went over the next 3 years through the dark night of the soul, as many people call it. And following him was, you know, it was excruciating. But also during that time, just to figure out what was happening with him, that's when we started doing all these interviews of psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health workers, social workers, and people with other people who had successfully made it through one of these crises, people with lived experience. And so there's been quite a journey, to tell you the truth. The film shows how he came through that, and it would take me a long time to talk about all that. But I'll just say the things that I learned while I was following Adam is, number one, just sitting down and interviewing him every 3 weeks. He told us that that was like therapy for him, just having somebody listen to him, to his experience, without saying, you're crazy, that didn't happen. You know, with just being curious about what he was going through. That was very helpful to him.
Yeah.
The other thing I learned, that especially for me, being a documentary filmmaker, being there with him, you know, always the question was, is this film going to be good for him in the long run, putting all this out to the public where all this stigma exists? And so I was concerned about that. And during the depths of his dark night of the soul, call it what you will, he started getting very paranoid about me and our team, and a co-director and myself. And he, one time he said, let's go out. And I went to do an interview, and he was living out behind this door in his car. And he said, let's take a walk out into the woods. And I could feel the fear come up in me, because Adam is a black belt in karate. He's very strong. And he had been talking about having these voices telling him to kill himself, to hurt other people. And so I had a bit of fear. And we went on that walk, and he started telling me how he was feeling like he was being exploited. And I just... You know, I broke down, and because I had a lot of pressure on me. One of the things, we funded this film with crowdfunding. We had 700 people back us to do this film. And so, you know, all of a sudden, 3 years into this project, we may be losing one of our main subjects. And so when I kind of broke down and said, I just said, Adam, I don't know if this film is going to be good for you or not. I mean, I'm worried about it, too. And I essentially not only broke down and started crying a bit, but he came up immediately, and he's very compassionate. He put his arm around me, said, don't worry, Phil, everything's going to be okay. And I really learned how important it is when you're with somebody like that to, one, show your own vulnerability, two, get, you know, you become uncertain just like they are. Not the expert that knows what's wrong, but just be somebody curious and engaging in at their level, without a hierarchy that, you know, I'm the doctor, you're the patient type of thing.
Yeah.
So that seemed to work very well. And from that point on, everything with Adam, and in terms of our relationship, was great.
That's so Akiah. Interesting. Let's, before you get to Akiah, just a comment. That's so interesting that you said that, because in the work that I've done, I've learned there's an acronym, LEAP, which is when you're with someone who's struggling like that, you listen, empathize, yeah, that must be really hard for you, agree, I would feel the same way, which is the P, which is partnering with them. Just listening to them can make such a big difference. And that's a great example. And being vulnerable.
What was the P, Eddie?
Partner. So by listening and being empathetic and agreeing that you would feel the same way under the same circumstances, you've created partnership, connected, right, rather than the hierarchy that you spoke of. I want to get to Akiah in just a minute, but I want to, first of all, remind our listeners again that this is a Mindful Emergence on WPVM-FM, and Margaret and I are joined this week by Phil Borges, a film director of the documentary Crazy Wise. The theme is Rethinking Madness, Psychosis, and Spiritual Awakening. I want to mention that Margaret and I are part of an organization called the Center for Spiritual Emergence, which is right along the same line as what you've learned, Phil, which is a place where people, it's a fully licensed by the North Department, you know, North Carolina Department of Health and Service Regulation, as a place who are where people who are struggling with these kinds of spiritual emergencies can go and get support and get treatment, and not be not just be branded and pathologized. Yeah, I'm trying to create the verb, and thank you for helping me. Anyway, I just want to mention that, and if people want to find out, the website is centerforspiritualemergence.com. There's a lot of information, a lot of resources on there. But Margaret's going to talk about the fact that the Center for Spiritual Emergence is actually going to be organizing a showing on your film, Crazy Wise, Phil.
So March 2018 at the Grail Movie House, we are going to be organizing a showing of the film Crazy Wise. We don't have all the details yet, so you can check out our website, amindfulemergence.com.
And you can email us at discover@amindfulemergence.com. discover@amindfulemergence.com. So any of you listening, if you want to get information on the showing, because we don't have a date yet, we're still in communication with the Grail Theater and working out the details. But if you want to get on the mailing list, just shoot us an email, discover@amindfulemergence.com. But we are going to do a showing. It's a wonderful movie. We want to give people in Asheville an opportunity to watch this. And Phil, what are other ways that people might be able to access this film or be able to show it in their communities with their organizations?
Right. If they can go to the website, our website is crazywisefilm.com, and they can stream it off our website, or they can purchase a DVD, or if somebody wants to do a community screening, which we really encourage, because it's the dialogue and the discussion that happens after we see the movie that I love the most, and because it just brings up a lot of things that people want to talk about that they haven't been able to talk about. So if they want to do a community screening, we have a community screening package on the website. I'll also add that we have a very robust resource page for people that families or individuals in a crisis can go to see where they can get help.
So that's crazywisefilm.com.
Yes.
And are you wanting to give out your own website as well?
Well, you're breaking up a little bit, Ed.
Did you want to give out your own website as well?
Yeah. My own website is philborges.com, and that's spelled B-O-R-G-E-S, P-H-I-L-B-O-R-G-E-S. And that also links to Crazy Wise, but it has a lot of my other work with women and women's empowerment and the work I've done with the Tibetan people and all the other human rights work I've done around the world.
Okay. So we've got about 7 minutes left in the show. Maybe we could talk a little bit about Akaya, and then also maybe if you want to say more about meditation and what you've learned about that.
Yeah.
If we have time.
Okay.
If we have time. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah, we're running short. Well, Akaya's case, I'll just make this a little bit shorter. Akaya was very interesting. She called us. We were blogging in the middle of this film. Every time we did an interview, we put it on our blog. And she called us and said, I'd like to be a part of the film. And she explained her situation. She had severe depression, and she also had severe childhood trauma. And she had found a peer support group in New York called Baltic Street, which was her first step. I mean, she had tried suicide several times, and this was her first step to recovery, was getting around a group of peers that they could talk with each other about their experience without being judged, and it was very healing for her to do that. But what happened to her, which is very interesting, Akaya is African-American, and she met a South African Sangoma, which is a shaman in South Africa, living in Baltimore, and she went through this essentially a shamanic initiation with this woman over a year and a half period, and we documented that. And that really made all the difference with Akaya. And a couple of things happened. Number one, she had her experience completely reframed from the disease model into you have a special sensitivity, you have to go through this initiation to learn how to work with these energies, and you will become a healer, which she now is. Her recovery was miraculous. But in it, she talks a lot about what meditation and mindfulness does. Kaya said, what that initiation had me do was to be with my feelings, to not run away from them, to make amends to the people I had hurt. She had to abandon her children when she was in the midst of her depression. And it's just that being with and not, you know, our system is based on suppression of the symptoms. It doesn't get to the underlying issues. And if you run away from those very uncomfortable feelings, this is in, I'm quoting Akaya here, by the way, if I would continue running away from my feelings and not being with them and facing them, I would have stayed in that state of depression that I was in.
Yeah.
So, and that's one of the things about mindfulness. It's, you know, you learn to stay with those uncomfortable thoughts and those uncomfortable feelings that come up, and take kind of an observer's view of them, and to slow down that mind chatter that goes on. It's why it's becoming so popular. I mean, mindfulness now is mainstream. Everybody in the healthcare world is in some form or another bending an ear and listening to people that are talking about it and incorporating it into their therapies. So,
yeah, it seems like it's the next mental health revolution.
I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about mindfulness, but we could have a whole program on that.
Oh, easily. What about learning to get in their bodies in a safe way? How helpful is that? And you know, how?
Oh yeah.
I mean, any listener out there? I mean, you could take that on, or you can. You know, there's another question, and we got about 3 minutes. How can someone out there help someone else who's in crisis? Is just by listening? Is that enough?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially. I mean, there's several things. It's listening is a big thing, big part of it. Being non-judgmental listening and support is very important. I've had so many people say, if I just had one person that would listen to me and I knew they cared about me, that's all I needed. But there is a lot more to it than that. And I'll just make a plug for one of the people in the film, Krista McKinnon, who started a website called Families Healing Together, where you can get online, because anybody with a child or somebody in their family suffering like this, it's so stressful on them as well.
Yeah.
And she put together this program where you can go online anonymously and ask other parents what is working, what isn't working, and she has a curriculum that goes along with it.
What's that website again?
Getting that kind of support for family members that are in this difficult situation with somebody going through a severe crisis.
What's that link again, Phil?
It's Families Healing Together. I believe it's .org. It could be .com.
Okay. In the last minute, how has doing this project changed you?
Oh, boy. So many ways. I mean, I knew nothing going into this project in terms of the crisis that our mental health system is in, the fact that suicide rates are up 24% in the last 15 years. Their mental health disability rates are climbing and quadrupled in a period of about 20 years. I knew nothing about the crisis, and I knew nothing about the experience. I'm so curious now about the experience itself, especially the good parts of it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The unity part of it, the feeling of oneness that you know, I'm a meditator myself, and that's what I'm aspiring to.
I'm going to have to jump in because we're running out of time, but I want to, we could just go on and on. It's such a fascinating subject. Phil Borges, thank you so much for joining this week. Producer
thank
of the
you,
film
Eddie.
Crazy Wise. Go see it. So I want to thank our listeners for tuning in once again to A Mindful Emergence.